I'm Mason Ingram. I'm the drummer for The Last Royals.
Hey, guys. I'm Eric James, the singer for The Last Royals.
Now, you're assuming guys. There might be... What if there are girls in the audience?
Girls, this is Eric James with The Last Royals.
You're supposed to change your voice. Hello, girls.
Oh, ladies. That's
right. I like revisionist history. So I'll fill in some blanks. Let's see. There's Brooklyn in Texas. There's Park Slope and East Williamsburg / Bushwick. You met while doing a charity album, which we will get a little bit more into because I don't know enough about that. You just finished a big fat residency to celebrate the new record.
It's tough to know. I've been thinking the other day as we were on this tour. And touring is a lot of work, as you know. And just that if I had to distill this whole thing down to one thing, it has to be that we're writing songs that people want to sing along to at the end of the day. It has to be that. If we're not doing that, then we should hang it up.
Hooks are cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're cool. They're everything, I think, to me. We listen to music all the time on the road, and we love all types of music.
So here's the three words that you've been quoted about a million times, but I kind of like it. Urban walking music is a pretty nifty way to describe something. Looking around at people on the street of any major city, whether it's Austin, whether it's Boston, whether it's other things that rhyme with Austin, you know, but all kidding aside, urban walking music is kind of an interesting thing. And that also does throw in a rhythm thing, but not a rhythm thing as in hip hop, but a rhythm of what's going on.
Circadian rhythm.
Right. So,
yeah, it was just a phrase that I put on the MySpace page when we first started getting the mixes, and just kind of, cause we had to put something up there.
Right.
And, with the ubiquitous earbuds, white earbuds, everywhere in every city, on every train, and every car, it just seemed that everyone that I see is sort of like living out their little music video all day long with something in their headphones. You know,
it wasn't like that like a dozen years ago.
Certainly not.
People had to read a book and the paper, and I'm not saying it's bad, but everybody. It's almost, in their phone or in their iPod.
It's a little, I mean, it's frightening. That's a whole other thing. So,
yeah.
But as I was sort of taking part myself, listening to these mixes, I wanted to hear these mixes on crappy little earbuds because that's basically how everybody listens to them. Just walking around my neighborhood, get a mix, go back, talk to the producer, talk to the mixer, say, oh, no, we need vocals up or this and that, this and that. And I just go back out on the street to feel it. You know?
It is true that the bottom, unless you get the really expensive buds that I've got, you know, that from the Shure ones that I paid a gazillion dollars for, there's no bottom there whatsoever.
Yeah, they sound like crap.
It's mid-range time.
Exactly. So if they can feel good on that, then you're doing something perhaps. At least that's how most people are going to hear it. But that, I don't know, it just came into my head. Like, and being from New York, I tell people before I moved to New York, I had zero sense of rhythm, you know, being a white, skinny, out of shape guy like myself. But then being in New York, it's sort of exponentially grown ever so steadily, this idea of groove and rhythm, certainly with much more present Latino culture there and stuff.
EP to full length, and there is quite the interesting progression for many reasons, not the least of which is you know, real, speaking of rhythms, you know, rhythms that are not just in the box. But tell me about the difference in that moment, because one of the things that I've read and heard you talk about is that, you know, you submitted some things to the label, and that the label kind of turned around and said, well, we'd like you to go back to school a little bit and do some stuff with this stuff.
Yeah, there was a few tunes that they said that about, and there was actually a few tunes that they liked and that I didn't want to have them continue on with. So we ended up, really the only song, there was two sessions represented on our full length, and there's really only one song from the first session, is Crystal Vases. That was the only thing that really...
Because that hung on from the previous it kinda got, incarnation.
Yeah, and the mix was kind of just okay. It was good enough, and it was already actually getting picked up by some radio, and so we certainly were going to redo it at that point.
Right.
I always feel like it could have been better, but it just goes to show I have no idea what I'm doing. So, yeah, I mean, there's been, you know, some probably obvious and typical pushback between us and the label about what the hell this thing's supposed to be, you know, artistically. And when the label signed the band, they had in their mind these songs, you know, the first sort of songs from the EP. And all along I was thinking, it needs to be better. It needs to sound like a rock band, you know?
So it was actually a pretty interesting story. Our manager at the time was also simultaneously working with another band, and he pitched the other band to the label that we are now on, which is Ooh La La. And like a good manager, he also pitched a couple of his other bands, one of which was us. And the label listened to the band that he pitched and said, we'd like to pass on them.
Not so much.
Not so much. But this other band that you got, we're very interested in that.
This is also a produced record. You did not, and I would say that if there's a sea change between the EP, you know, and your quote is that it sounds, you know, more like a band and less like electro, is the quote that I've heard you say several times. But there's also, you know, I listened to several songs on there as I was coming here, and the meter stays right there. Now, luckily, it's not the fuzzy stuff, you know, because that's the thing. You go to Detroit and you mm-hmm. get the right filters and you get a lot of fuzzy stuff. Mm-hmm. But this does sound, it's meant to sound big. And I know that big is not negative for this band at mm-hmm. all in any way, exactly. shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's one thing is, if you kind of go back to the original birth of music in any performer, before the band is formed, before anything's formed, no one really necessarily dreams of playing in a basement to 20 people. Maybe some people do,
some
but
people,
I guess...
it's kind of scary, but people do.
But as far as Eric and I are concerned, we didn't. We viewed this in a big situation. And it's not necessarily because we're starving for the fame or the attention or anything like that. But going back to what Eric said earlier, just like desiring to play songs that people want to sing along, it becomes like a congregational type thing where everyone wants to be involved and everyone wants to sing along. And that to us happens really well in a stadium, or not a stadium, but a bigger place.
So tell me about the producer-artist relationship. Yeah. And how many producers did you look at?
Yeah.
Because you had a perception of what you wanted.
Our good friend Mike Beck, and the producer of this record, is the guy that we also met when we were doing that charity record that you spoke of. He was the one producing that record on spec for all these songwriters. And I've been doing some type of music for years and years now as a solo artist in other bands. And all along the way, I've always had this idea that, man, if I'm going to find a producer, he better make me a whole lot better than I actually am. That's what a producer should do. He should take an artist and just absolutely maximize their strengths. And I've certainly worked with guys that have done that here and there, but I've never worked with the guy that I'm really confident is making me basically someone that I can't really be on my own, you know? And otherwise, what's the point of having a producer? You know, you might as well just get an engineer and a mixer. So Mike Beck is certainly that for us. He's a great friend. We've done lots of projects with him. He actually plays with the band sometimes, plays bass, keys. And he's, like me, an extremely insecure artist and has no idea how, he doesn't know how people are going to think about stuff, which is probably why his mixes sound fresh and I think really great. He finishes a song and he says, I don't know, I think people are going to hate it, which is the same thing that I say after doing a vocal take. So we're this insecure sort of like little trio, but we definitely needed someone like him to push us, to push that sort of threshold of sound and of bigness, if you want to call it. Because if I was left to my own wares, it would be the sleepy electro kind of dude in a bedroom thing, which I knew wasn't really what I wanted to do, but it was all I knew how to do myself. Obviously, Mason is trained up as a professional percussionist drummer. He's kind of from a different school. The school that I kind of went through, I was signed to a production company 10 years ago as a sort of floundering kid. I was from Pittsburgh at the time, and I got signed to a developmental deal, and the head of the label was intent on getting me a hit song, you know, and however that had to go, he was fine with whatever went down. So I sort of bit the bullet, and I think very with a very poor attitude, actually, looking back. I went on all these writing sessions and did the LA thing where I wrote 30
you
songs. Yeah. I ridded myself of all humility. I did the LA thing for 30 days straight, writing with a different person every day, and, you know, writing with hit makers, like the big guys and men and women who, you know, are millionaires, you know, showing me their three pools as we're about to go, you know, sit down with the acoustics. And I hated it.
So we all put our finger in exactly the same, yes.
Yeah.
The factory.
And I really, really hated it.
Nashville's equally fun. I know you have an affinity for Nashville too.
No, we do not. And
I know.
And Nashville, you know, I haven't been on the Nashville sort of circuit writing there, but
it's the same thing. It's a little friendlier, but it's the same.
Yeah. I think going through that, looking back now, I learned so much whether I wanted to or not. You know, I looked at it like a 3-year kind of grad school that I didn't have to pay for, you know? So yeah, songwriting has always been, it's the great elusive sort of diamond out there somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, are we going to find it on this one? Or are we not? Well, there's always another song to give it a shot, you know? So it's, to me, it's the most mysterious and most, I think, invigorating pursuit about music.
And it's, I also feel like it's the point where bands and artists can become the most sidetracked, where that's where the point of the song is lost, and the point of sonics is maybe pursued a little more. And so with us, I think it's hard, and I know through the whole process between us two and Mike, it's always been this gradual pushing back onto the focus is the song. The focus is not this guitar tone. The focus is not even this whole take. The focus is the song. And if it serves the song, then it's correct. Right. And if it doesn't, then it's not
like
correct.
Indie band, like in pop clothes.
Yeah, well, look, we're not even going to go down the definitions of what pop is and what indie is, because I think that's like saying independent film these days. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what is that? So I'm gonna do the silly questions for each of you, but they're both kind of relevant to me. So when you talked about drumming chops, drumming for Broadway shows requires two things. It requires humility, undoubtedly, because you're down there in the pit.
Yes.
So you're performing and you're doing your thing and you're doing it for thousands of people a week, but you're also, you know, and you're a union guy and you're doing what you're doing, but it also requires precision. Being in that environment before doing this environment is kind of an interesting thing, because you still must force yourself to be precise, I would imagine. And precise, not in a bad way.
Exactly. Yes. It's a very interesting world, and it's actually I'm currently existing in both simultaneously. So it wasn't even a precursor
one pays the bills.
To this.
Yes, I know.
And we won't say which one.
Oh,
but
we know which one. It's the band.
Exactly.
Without a doubt. Sure.
It's, you know, I do think it comes back to a point you made earlier about being down in the pit. It is about humility, and one of the hardest things with Broadway stuff is, at the end of the day, I'm still following a conductor. And so in a rock band, I am the conductor.
You are the conductor. Yeah.
And in Broadway, I'm not the conductor. And that's kind of hard when the night before you play a rock gig, and no matter what happens, kind of everyone's going with you. Whether you're right or you're wrong, they're still going with you. And then you walk in and all of a sudden, doesn't matter where you think it should be. It's where the conductor thinks it should be. And honestly, he's right.
He's right because it's his job. It's his job to be precise.
Yeah.
Back to that word.
Exactly. But as far as like the looseness and the tightness goes, for me personally, it's been a very long process. I've gone through periods of overthinking it. And then listening back and hating what I've played, which is always ironic. To me, I have a practice room. It's 5x5. It's boring. It's small. It's depressing. And I love it in some way. And I want to overthink everything there. And then I want to get on stage and I don't want to think. I just want to play. And so to me, that's where hopefully the looseness comes, where the looseness isn't a purposeful looseness and the tightness isn't a purposeful tightness, but it's all a subconscious thing and it's all in the moment and it's all listening to the rest of the band, watching the audience and maybe pushing a little bit to create a little more excitement or not, but not really thinking about it, you know. Every time I think about the drums, they always sound really bad.
What I've done is I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Cool.
And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.